The war on drugs is just one symptom of the American criminal justice system gone awry. Reforms are desperately needed in the areas of mass incarceration to asset forfeiture, police brutality to racial profiling, mandatory minimum sentencing to solitary confinement, and so much more. One group of law enforcement professionals has recognized the need to reform policing to better protect and serve the people. Join us now for another discussion with a speaker from LEAP, the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, in this edition of Police for Reform.
Welcome back, everybody. 31 after the hour, and joining us today in our LEAP segment, Police for Reform, we've got Brian Chapman, a former corrections officer from the state of Texas. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? How long did you serve as a corrections officer, and what got you into that field?
Well, I was a probation officer in Dallas, Texas, in Dallas County, for Dallas County Community Supervision Corrections Department. I was in that position for about 3.5, almost 4 years. I originally got into that job. I actually have my bachelor's degree in criminal justice, so when I graduated, I was interested in getting to law enforcement or corrections one way, so I ended up applying for Dallas County, and I was a probation officer for that time.
You know, we were just talking in the news about the city of Dallas, their city council, in a 10-5 vote passing, an ordinance for anyone caught with less than a quarter pound of marijuana. They would just get a cite and release sort of ticket. What do you think about that news? Is that something that was even approachable when you were serving?
No. I've been really pleased with the city of Dallas and really the state of Texas as a whole. About 3-4 years now when I left, the idea of that happening, I didn't have a real positive outlook of that happening then than I do now. So I'm really glad to see this residents, the City Council of Dallas, and really Texans as a whole, changing their mind and opinion about this issue.
How much did marijuana violations factor into your job as a parole or probation? Was it parole, you said, or probation?
Probation officer.
Probation. Sorry about that. As a probation officer, how much did it factor in for you? Because I understand, you know, people would have to be tested and take P tests and such, and marijuana would definitely cause a failure there.
Yeah, what I always tell people is, especially with marijuana, you waste so much time and energy and money, taxpayers' money, on really a nonviolent crime and a substance that is really, most honestly, is going to be much less dangerous than alcohol. And it just really bothered, you know, just the amount of time and energy that we were wasting. We could have been focusing more on, you know, violent criminals and things like that. And it really just kind of, you know, got to me after a while, just saying that we're just wasting our time, just spinning our wheels here. You're just trying to enforce these marijuana laws.
Did you ever have situations where you had folks that had run afoul of the law in a legit sense? You know, they had committed real crimes, but through this, they were coming through probation. They were doing well. You know, their lives were turning around. They were being responsible, except they get dinged on a P test. And how did that affect them in their arc?
Well, I mean, yeah, they'd be making progress on probation, and all of a sudden they just have a positive urinalysis test for marijuana, and all of a sudden now they got to go back to court. Now they got to go back in front of the judge. You may have a warrant put out for them now. So it's basically, it almost came counterproductive at that point. They were doing so well. They were doing really well. And you were, you know, as a probation officer, that's what you wanted to see. You had a vested interest in that. And then you see something like that happen. And then all of a sudden, hey, now you got a warrant. So cops are going to be looking for you. So, I used to go tell them, just go handle this now, because I really don't want to have you arrested in my office. So I see that even with probationers who were on probation for a possession case. They would, you know, other than just using marijuana, I mean, they were functioning. They had jobs. They had families. They had, they were basically self-sufficient, adults just like anyone else. But, just the fact that you just want to use marijuana after work instead of a glass of wine or, beer or something like that, it really just kind of, it really just felt like we were really being counterproductive.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And as we look at the statistics when it comes to the enforcement of these marijuana laws, we find time and time again they're racially disproportionate, that minorities are getting the brunt of this, especially younger folks. Did you see that in your time serving? And do you feel that, ending this war on marijuana is going to make a big difference in that respect?
Oh, it'd be huge. I think that's probably one of the bigger things. When I was a probation officer, if the area that I was in charge in Dallas would be the inner city of Dallas. So if I was if I was in the inner city of Dallas, doing home visits or even just in the area, the war on drugs has created such a distrust between our minority communities in this country and the inner cities and law enforcement to the point where I didn't even have my badge on. If I was in that area, if anyone ever asked me what I was doing, I was just telling them I was selling car insurance just because I created such a huge. It just created such a huge distrust that I would not tell people what I did for a living. And
I got to interrupt you, Brian. I got to say, in my neighborhood, somebody coming door to door to sell car insurance. That would be not somebody you wanted knocking on the door, but I guess, everybody's perspective is different. And I guess the car insurance guy is a little less threatening than the guy with the badge.
Yes. Yes. So I would say, yeah. And so that was my experience with it. And if you were to, basically legalize marijuana, so much has been going on, the last couple of years with, minority communities and the police. I would seriously believe you would see a majority of that disappear.
So it's when we're talking in larger issues like the Black Lives Matter movement and that whole situation where there's this, escalation to violence in situations that doesn't seem necessary. Do you really think that's a lot of that is part of the war on drugs leading to this, stop and frisk mentality among the cops?
It is. Well, it's always funny because my probationers would always tell me their stories, and it was always interesting because you go, I'd like to listen to them, and they always give you a different perspective. They would tell me, they'd get pulled over, and the first thing the cops do is, be looking like asking, where's the drugs at? Just blatantly, the first thing they'll ask them. And then they would tell me, I'm just driving down the street, and all of a sudden, if I drive by this one trap house or whatever, known trap house, even if I just drive right by it, these cops will be following me just because of that area was just such a red zone for them. And they would just talk about they just felt harassed. They didn't feel comfortable contacting the police. It also created issues because what would happen is that they actually had a legitimate problem, at home or something like that or in their area. No one would want to call the police just because it created such a distrust between law enforcement and their community.
Hmm. So we actually make the problems worse. We worry about the cities and the crime rates there, and so we want effective policing to deal with that. And then we disincentivize people from wanting to call the police to deal with those situations. That's just making things worse.
It's to me, it just made no sense after just seeing. It's basically after you see it so often, it just really just kind of just makes you think for a minute, like, wow, this there has to be another way.
Well, and we also see the devastating consequences of this when police officers are ambushed and shot at now in these situations that nobody wants to see. Even people, everybody wants to have, almost everybody, I think, would want to have safe streets.
Well, yeah, I would say if you're a supporter of the police, this would be one. Legalizing marijuana would actually be something you would want to support because you wouldn't be putting police in dangerous situations. Like for me, for me, going into some of these neighborhoods and some of these homes, you know, I was in a situation where it would, quite frankly, it would not have been for anyone else. It would not have been. They would not have felt safe. And as me as a probation officer, I learned how to handle those situations much better. If I actually went into the house and there was actually drugs right in front of me, instead of confronting a probationer in their house, I just look at it and just look at them and just say, "I'll see you in 2 weeks," and walk right out. Because I didn't want to confront them and create a more hostile situation for me. And I imagine, you know, for police officers throughout the country, especially for, you know, patrolling the inner cities and things like that, it just creates such a hostile work environment for the police officers that, you know, they probably end up doing things that they will not want to be doing or responding in ways that when they wouldn't want to responding. And that's where you kind of see all these issues that have been happening here over the years. And just for me, just because of these illegal substances that we made illegal has been really being the cause of it.
So when you went out on these visits, you were just going out alone without a badge, unarmed?
I was unarmed, yes.
Wow. Okay.
I was unarmed.
That's something we don't really think much about. I mean, we think a lot about our police officers going into hostile situations, but they've got, you know, their taser, their baton, their gun, some body armor, a partner, a canine. You're going in there all by yourself? That's amazing.
Well, I always said my brain was my biggest weapon. I mean, it was basically just how you presented yourself, how you carried yourself and things like that, and realizing, you know, if there's something illegal going on, this is not the place to handle it.
So how come probation officers aren't teaching the police officers these techniques? They could really use it.
Well, I think really it's like, for me personally, when I was a probation officer, I could still go to the roughest parts of Dallas today, and I'll still run into my old probationers, and they'll still come up and talk to me. We'll just chat like we, you know, like we were when I was supervising them years ago. And it's just because I think sometimes with police officers now, we kind of have a shoot first, ask questions later mentality with a lot of them. And I don't really think that, I really think that's just a problem with a lot of them. And I don't think they're really being real level-headed when they're getting into some of these situations, even if it's just something as simple as just a traffic stop or something like that. And that's where I think where you kind of see all these, you know, issues arising.
I wanted to talk to you about one other situation, but it's not in Texas, and it's maybe outside of your experience, being that it happened in a prison. But in Florida, there was this case of a man who ended up getting boiled to death, pretty much. They put him in this shower, locked him in for a couple hours with 160-degree water, and the guy ended up dying, and no charges ended up being filed. And just, I guess, in a general sense, as someone who worked in law enforcement, what needs to happen so that some of these people actually get held accountable? I think that would help to build some of that trust back up.
Well, I mean, it'd just be if there's, you know, police officers doing things like that, the county needs to prosecute them. They need to really do a full investigation, independent investigations. And I think another thing, too, that we need to do as well is law enforcement, corrections, probation, just law enforcement altogether really is not equipped. I believe the gentleman was mentally ill.
Yes, yes.
Is not really equipped to handle mental illness. Because I believe he was arrested for a drug charge.
He was in serving correctly. A cocaine possession charge. He was a mentally ill schizophrenic man who had smeared feces all over his cell, and they were punishing him by throwing him in the shower.
Yeah, and a lot of mentally handicapped, I know from my experience, when I had mentally handicapped probationers, they would do things that you wouldn't really. That wouldn't make sense to you. Let's put it that way.
That's mental illness. Yes.
that's mental illness. So, and I really, a lot of law enforcement, especially in the prisons and jails, they're not mental health facilities. They're prisons and jails. And that's where you have a lot of these issues. I think really until you address that issue, that really should be one of the big issues to address. And I think if you do that, then you won't have these issues with police or corrections officers who don't understand how mental illness works, and then they do things like this.
Well, Brian Chapman from Law Enforcement Action Partnership, we appreciate the time that you served there in Dallas, and especially now the time that you are putting in as a speaker for Law Enforcement Action Partnership. You can find out more about LEAP at leap.cc. That's LEAP.cc. Or if you want to type a little bit, you can go to copsaylegalizeddrugs.com and find the same information. They've got a speakers bureau with speakers in almost every state and a lot of foreign countries now. So if you've got like a Lions Club meeting, a Rotary, a city council meeting even, they can oftentimes find you a speaker who can deliver the message to end adult drug prohibition, not just marijuana, adult drug prohibition, and come up with smarter, more sensible, more compassionate reforms for law enforcement. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. Tomorrow, I head deep into Mordor. We're off on our way to the Mount Doom Hemp Fest, and I'm going to tell you all about Governor Sauron when we come back.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.